it's such a relief. And I'm like, damn, it shouldn't be a war to get good representation, which brings me to today's topic. There is a lawsuit that just got settled. It is a lawsuit that was against the MLS PIN. Yeah. Courtney and friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to Under All is the Land, Season 4, Episode 8. I am your host, Courtney Polis, here with my rock star co-stars, Silke Fernald.
Hello.
And Dominique Madden.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yay.
Welcome back.
We're back. Have you guys ever heard, before we get deeper into what today's topic is, I want to just ask you, have you ever heard that real estate agents kill deals?
Yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yes. You've seen it.
We've been there.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to share that I think it's healthy for real estate agents to actually get on the buying side, well, or listing side. I mean, get on the consumer side of the transaction for a minute. Since we've been so inspired by our guests this season, Nick and I have been looking out of state for investment properties. And as a result, we have been speaking with a lot of so-called buyer agents. And we've learned a few things that I want to share with the public.
And so-called listing agents.
Give
me the tea.
Oh, my God.
All right.
Well, first of all, I realize that in different cities, there's probably a pace of work that's, like, considered culturally acceptable. But a lot of people do not answer the phone after 5 p.m. in other places. I realize that. I mean, here in L.A., you have to be responsive at least until, like, 8:30, 9 o'clock, I'd say. It's expected. But five, really, dog? And we're here on the West Coast, so, like, if we're calling East Coast,
it's two here.
So early here that, like, we can't get shit done. So I would think, like, if I had people from out of state calling me, I would accommodate, as an agent trying to get their business, I would accommodate their time schedule, even if it's slightly inconvenient for me.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
We actually even, okay, first, let me just tell you about this one. So we were looking at this one property. This is in Missouri. We found a property, looked good on paper, reached out to the listing agent, and we were like, you know what? We're agents too. We can do a referral fee. You guys write up the offer for us, whatever. They wrote up the offer, even though we asked for dual agency, so there would be a fiduciary responsibility. They wrote up the offer and just kind of tried to slide it through that we were writing with no representation. I know. After the agreement that we had in the email was like, hey, do you guys do dual agency? If so, we'll ask for a 25% referral fee, like whatever. And when they drafted the offer, they wrote it with no agency on our side, as if we were going in completely unrepresented. They had no responsibility.
Okay.
So Neek caught it and was like, that's not right. So, like, we went back to the person and said, like, hey, this says no representation. We want agency, you know? And the guy's like, oh, I have to ask my boss. And I was like, what? First of all, if you ever want to work with us again, you should be much more accommodating. If you don't know what dual agency is or don't know how to handle it, then pass us off to someone else and say, like, you know, we're not comfortable doing that. We'll refer you to somebody else. Fine.
And in Missouri, you can have dual agency.
You can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so he should have known how to handle.
Hell yeah, he should.
Okay,
but instead, he lost our trust.
Right.
But that's not even the worst of it. Okay. We submitted an offer at, like, slightly less than list, right? But anticipating a common sense negotiation.
After the property had been listed for, like, 6 months.
Yeah, it's been on the market for, like, ever. Okay.
So they want to sell it. You would.
Well, one would think.
You would think.
One would think.
So we write an offer that is definitely had a place where you could meet in the middle and it would not be, and we're talking about low dollar amounts. So, you know, probably, like, just for shits and giggles, I'll say, like, say it's offered at 350, we wrote at 300 expecting 325, right?
Right?
Something like that. So the broker at his firm is, like, married to one of the owners of this property. So not only is this person going to get the commission on the dual agency, which should supplement some of the sales price stuff. But also, you know, you would think we'd have a more favorable, there'd be a more favorable kind of response, right? This is what buyers think whenever you go into dual agency situations, like you have some kind of an advantage. Mm-hmm. But in fact, they came back list price or nothing, okay? To which the agent didn't say like, hey guys, I recommend you go back with like some other thing, like trying to help us make a deal. He didn't do any agenting at all for us. Like didn't lobby for us, did not like.
Sounds like some of the desert agents here.
Yeah. I mean, I was just like, damn, is this what the experience of buyers is? Is this why a Redfin or a, you know, some, or like a limited services agency could seem like a good deal? Because if buyers in general have to do this much work on their own, and the agents are just sitting there doing a little bit of admin, not answering their phones and not doing any agenting, then I can understand why buyers would be so frustrated. That's not the way we do it. We're like, our work is valuable because we actually work.
Yeah.
So I was like, just flabbergasted. Then, so we're like, Neek's like, we're drawing a hard line. It's a no, you know? Like, so we're like, no.
I'm not going back and forth when this thing has been sitting on the month, on the market for 6 months. Like, ah, fuck that. Are
right.
you kidding me?
Meanwhile, it's just
that's
like.
That's why it's been sitting, because they're not budging on their price.
I mean, come on, but we're talking about peanuts compared to LA prices. Like, really peanuts.
Now, honestly, we weren't that far off. At a point, it became the principle for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're not just, you know, I have a feeling that they probably were like, oh, these like, you know,
out of towners
from LA, they can afford this. Like, no, you know, it's, what is it worth to me?
Right. What is it worth to you?
What is it worth to me?
It's not
worth
like it. A real buyer.
True.
Clearly, it's overpriced.
When we get it now, we're like, no.
What is it worth to you?
Just like I said on $1 million listing, if you list a property and there aren't offers in hand within a certain amount of time, it's
the
price.
You gotta lower
the
price. Yeah.
It's the price.
Yep.
There's not more you can do. So.
So did that person come back to you after you said
on.
No?
Wait a second.
Oh.
So Neek says no. Okay. So she sends an email to the agent who's supposedly gonna help us, and says, "Are there any other properties you might recommend? Because now you know what we're looking for, right?"
Mm-hmm.
4 days goes by before this motherfucker gets back to us. Sorry, guys. Was consumed by my own move. Here's a link to something. Like, it was just so half-hearted and so half-assed. It made us stop looking in that state altogether.
Oh my God.
We're like, fuck this.
All right, we're done.
Okay,
sorry.
Oh, wait, there's more.
Oh,
there's
my God.
More. Neek, do you want to tell the story of Jackson?
Yeah, so... Reached out, well, did some research, right, for Jackson, Mississippi agents, because that was another market we were considering. And, you know, found, I mean, there are options, right? But there was one in particular that, you know, I looked her up. She had great reviews on, like, Google and, you know, a couple other platforms. And then she also had an Instagram where, you know, it was, like, pretty well, you know, pretty well done Instagram where it had, like, a lot of infographics about, like, investing in St. Louis and neighborhoods and da da da, and it just felt like it spoke to what we were trying to do. And so I reached out to her and we scheduled a call, and literally within the first 5 minutes we could tell it was a no. Like,
okay. Neek is being very generous right now. So first of all, the lady was like, hi. And you're like, are the lights on here? I don't know, right? So we're like, yeah. So Neek's so perky and cute on the phone. Like, she's like, so yeah, so we're really interested in like these properties. And like, what do you know about this thing? And how is this doing? And how's the economy here? And how's the rental market? And she's like, well, the rental market is really based on, you know, demand, you know, like what street you're on. Like all these vague answers to questions you should know as a real estate agent if this is your area.
Right.
Like, you asked me what a 4-bedroom house rents for in Mount Washington. I'm gonna have an answer for you right now.
Yeah.
Somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000, depending on condition. Boom,
right.
No problem. I know my market, you know? But this chick was just giving us these vague answers. Then her phone was doing weird stuff. It sounded like she was eating. There'd be like these weird delays. Oh, sorry, just a sec. Oh, okay, all right, I'm back. It's like, what?
Wow.
But also like the things she was, you know, much of what she actually did say, I could already find on my own. Like, she didn't contribute anything.
Right.
And then, like, questions that I know I know have more of an answer than what she was giving, she wasn't answering. So for example, there was a property that was listed somewhere in like the mid hundreds, you know, that looked like an attractive option, okay? And if you were to go like what I would presume to probably be about 15, 20 minutes southwest of that property, all of a sudden there are all these single families that are 20, 30, 40, 50 grand, you know? So I'm like, what's up with the price difference between these and that? Like, is this neighborhood so much more developed than this other neighborhood? Is this a neighborhood that's growing where we can pick up these 20, 30, 40, you know, $1,000 single families? Like, should we be considering that? She's like, you know, yeah, anywhere in Jackson, really. Anywhere in Jackson is a good investment. You know, the whole city is doing things.
Yeah, so I'll take like, five of those $20,000.
Yeah, okay,
we'll
cool.
We'll take a couple of the hundreds over there.
It's like, yeah. Just like, you know,
it's like, tell me that, you know, this area is not so desirable right now because there's a lack of investment. Does it have a chance of investment?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, but give me more. You know, there was no, there was nothing there.
There was no there.
It was
there.
Clear that it, as an agent, I think her sole purpose is close a deal. Not really help
well,
me.
Well, she was probably not even considering closing the deal because she couldn't even make it happen.
Well, I mean, you know.
Well,
I mean,
that's what giving agents a bad rep.
That's what I'm
that's
saying.
That's what gives, that's why those are the used car sales guys.
Well, not just that. These are untrained agents who don't speak the language of investors, who download templates from Canva or, you know, 4th Street Creative or all these other internet download templates kind of places. And they actually are never taught what the words mean.
Right. Mm-hmm. It looks good.
They don't know the things investors are actually looking for. So even though your Instagram makes it look like you know about investment, you really don't know anything. I think we asked about Airbnb regulations. Yeah. She didn't know. Oh, well, everything's different neighborhood by neighborhood. Oh, you know, it's just like a mess. It was like, I'm texting Nick while we're on the call. Like, this is a hard no for me, you know? But I just thought, God, if this is the buyer experience,
bad.
Like nationwide, not only are we doing things really right here, so, you know?
Yeah.
But also, damn, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
It was really disappointing for us.
It was really
disappointing. Like there was no effort made. And yes, everybody wants the deal that's easy. I mean, it was just like they weren't willing to do the work to get there.
Right. It's like, yeah, I can help you write up an offer. You
did
know?
You find anybody
no
good?
Guidance.
Oh, wait. It gets better. It gets better. So after the phone call, okay, we ended the phone call. Again, Neek being very generous, as she is, was like, okay, well, why don't you just shoot me over some other things that you think could be good opportunities, right? So this chick responds and says, I'm only going to send you stuff if you sign exclusivity with me. And like, unless, if you don't sign it, then there's no further work I'll do. Or something like, it was kind of like a ridiculous email. And Neek was like, we're no longer interested.
Yeah. Then but she called me the next day.
Did she?
Which I did not answer.
I mean.
Like, there's no more conversation.
There's no
here.
More conversation.
Yeah, you know,
you don't value our time. You're not earning our trust. And you have no market knowledge that we couldn't find online. You lose.
And you're demanding, you're demanding representation without giving us
any reason.
Anything.
Yeah, if that call had gone different, then a conversation around representation would have been a completely different conversation. Mm-hmm. Because we can understand exclusivity.
Of course.
Wanting people who, you know,
want to work with us
and who will be, you know, like, you know, what do you call it?
Loyal
to us, right? While we're doing a lot of groundwork. That's one thing. But you could tell that was not what we were about to get there. So I'm not signing on to a bad deal. Like, no, for sure not.
And also, you know, we do buyer presentations. We show you what we do. Then you make a decision. Is this what you want? We make an agreement to work together. This chick didn't show us what she could do. She did nothing. She said, I'm not doing anything. And I'm thinking, well, if you can't do anything to get our business, what are you going to do after we agree to give you our business? But I always train our agents, like every single person who walks through the door could be a $20,000 commission or, you know, could be a potential client for you, a lifetime client forever, you know, client. You got to treat people like who walk through the door with the possibility of partnership in the long term, you know. And this lady, like, if she didn't think we were actually looking for a rep, she's wrong. We were looking for somebody who could help us now and in the future because this is what we want to do. So I just felt like it was such a missed opportunity. And both of them, I mean, I just thought, wow, what a
Were they younger? Were they older? I don't know the age of the one in
No, like Missouri,
in the agent years, how long had that been?
Oh, in the business?
Yeah, I think she was like 15 years, something like that. Yeah, she was a long-term agent.
So is there a happy ending?
Not in those two
states. Well, we have a better agent now, I'd say, in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, we have a better agent in Pennsylvania.
But she's more proactive.
She's way more proactive.
Yeah, for sure.
And she's, like, on it, and she's smart, and she's closed a lot of deals, and I'm very appreciative of her ability to help us. And she's doing what I would expect her to do. Mm. And to be fair, from those lessons learned, I'm now laying out my expectations early on. So before we even wrote the offer, I said to her, like, this is what I need because we're not there. I need you to attend the inspections. I need you to meet the contractors. I need you to you know, and I said it. And do you agree to do this or not? Because if not, I'll keep looking, you know, and she agreed. So now she's living up to her agreement. But it was very clear. It's such a relief. And I'm like, damn, it shouldn't be a war to get good representation, which brings me to today's topic. There is a lawsuit that just got settled. It is a lawsuit that was against the MLS PIN, which is a New England MLS. It was not against NAR because it's a broker-owned MLS. So there are some MLSs that are not obligated to adhere to National Association of Realtors standards, but choose to if they want to. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they're, but they chose to adhere to. So we have a National Association of Realtors. That's what allows us to call ourselves realtors. They set the code of ethics, mm-hmm. and they make sometimes very irrational, like in my opinion, out of tune rules and regulations. So one of those that I've been always not a fan of is the clear cooperation policy. Clear cooperation policy requires, supposedly, sellers to pay a cooperating commission. And I should say the way that they require this is by making sure that agents don't take pocket listings. So the pocket listing is obviously when we don't put the listing on the MLS. The MLS, the multiple listing service, is a marketplace for us to shop our listings to other agents at other brokerages and offer to pay them a commission that's taken out of our commission. Now, the actual code of ethics for NAR, which I pulled because I just found it so fascinating. Article 3 of the NAR code of ethics reads, and I quote, "Realtors shall cooperate with other brokers except when cooperation is not in the client's best interest. The obligation to cooperate does not include the obligation to share commissions, fees, or to otherwise compensate another broker," which totally goes against NAR clear cooperation. So there's conflict within their own like rules and regulations and code of ethics. But standard of practice 3.1 says, "Realtors acting as exclusive agents or brokers of sellers, landlords, establish the terms and conditions of offers used to cooperate. Unless expressly indicated in offers to cooperate, cooperating brokers may not assume that the offer of cooperation includes an offer of compensation." Okay. So the point is the realtors establish the terms and conditions of the offers to cooperate according to the code of ethics. So one of the things that has come up in these online conversations in my Real Estate Mastermind Facebook group and stuff like that is that agents themselves are confused about who sets the offer to cooperate. My understanding, per the code of ethics, is that when I sign a listing agreement with a seller, that the percentage of commission is negotiable between me and the seller, right? Like the principal, the broker, and the principal. What I opt to offer as an incentivizing commission for another agent to bring a buyer is up to me. I always thought, yes, I run it by the seller and it is in the listing agreement. So it's not like you can just like
change it arbitrarily.
Change your mind, yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, it's not like something I don't discuss with the seller. Yeah. I do discuss, like we could, you know, we can do it many different ways. We can do, you know, this percentage to me and this percentage to the buyer's agent, or if we're feeling like we want to incentivize even more, we can offer more to the buyer agent, whatever. You know, it's a conversation we have. But at the end of the day, The listing agreement is between me and the seller, or the broker in this case, and the seller. So I'm like, how is this lawsuit even having legs? So here's what the lawsuit is about, okay? So basically, these plaintiffs, known as Nosalic or something, will use what they basically are asserting that the sharing of commissions between listing and buyer brokers inflates the seller costs and is a conspiracy in restraint of trade in violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act. So they're saying that the fact that the listing agents are sharing their commissions with buyer brokers inflates their seller costs in such a way that it is a conspiracy. And I'm thinking, did someone put a gun to your head and tell you you have to sign this listing agreement right at this price? Commissions are always negotiable.
Yeah, if it was a set rate, that argument might make more sense.
But
because it's not a set rate and it's a discussion, and a broker could opt to accept it or not. You know, if you're not willing to pay my fee, then I'm not going to work with you because my fee is what enables me to do the full service job that I do for you.
100%.
If you don't want full service, go get a
discount
agent.
Go to a one percenter.
Yeah.
Go get a limited services right agent.
So
there are plenty of companies that will be more than willing to offer a limited scope for a different price. So this is another piece that's starting to piss me off about contract law with relation to real estate. You know,
there
are a lot of things. There are many, many things. So our contract seems to have no meaning anymore. No
matter, it's so true.
So what is, go on. Like,
okay, but wait, I think is a real problem.
There's a lot of problems.
We're going to talk about the other two. There are two other important things here that I want to talk about that are not related to this lawsuit, but are related to consumers pretending like they haven't read the contract they signed, which makes our disclosures and all of the language, like the fact that there is language that is literally in the listing agreement, which explains exactly what the fee is, how it's going to be shared, et cetera, et cetera. They sign their name to it. Mm-hmm. The fact that consumers can win on this is very distressing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It makes all of our contracts seemingly ineffective.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like after the deal's done and I get my money, if I'm unhappy, I can just sue somebody and say, I thought that they charged too much for their services.
Sure.
So basically, the MLS PIN, I don't know if they call it the MLS PIN, but I'm guessing they do. So they settled with these plaintiffs for $3 million.
It's ridiculous.
Now the $3 million, of that $3 million, a large part of it, 1.642500, is going to go for future expenses for litigation against the remaining defendants for the benefit of settlement class members. So they made a class action lawsuit, and they're using a lot of the proceeds from this lawsuit settlement to fund attorneys to continue to sue MLS's, I guess,
broker-owned MLS's.
To try and get them to admit that they've, you know, overcharged sellers. There are so many things about this. Well, yeah, I mean, that's essentially what MLS PIN is doing, is they're saying, okay, we're going to change the language of our listings. Mind you all, again, that the National Association of Realtors, which allows us to call ourselves realtors and has long set the standard by which we perform our job, they're the ones who made this policy that the MLSs are abiding by, because it's kind of like industry standard to presume. Well, I mean, you'd be in violation of clear cooperation if you don't enter your listing into the MLS, which means you have to have an offer to share, even if it's a dollar, even though it's against their code of ethics. And even though big brokerages, like we've talked about, like Compasses and other brokerages, can literally create an in-house MLS, supposedly, that doesn't have access to the wider general public and say that these are insider exclusives. Now, again, no discussion is being made about whether or not that's actually to the benefit of the consumer. Because in my opinion, if it's not being marketed to the widest possible audience, you're probably not getting the best price, right? So even though the brokerage is making some money, and we know some brokerages don't operate and a plus. So right. they probably really need the money.
Yeah.
But the idea of the consumer falling for this feels like another lawsuit waiting to happen. But
right.
I digress.
Right.
The suit alleges that MLS PIN is not directly required to abide by NAR rules, but nonetheless adopted a rule similar to an NAR rule that requires listing brokers to offer a blanket unilateral offer of compensation to buyer brokers in order to submit the listing to PIN. So literally, the MLS is being punished for abiding by an NAR policy. Now, how many different people have to tell NAR that this policy is ineffective? It's hurting people, it's ridiculous, and now it's financially hurting broker-owned MLSs. It's such a conflict. It's so ridiculous. So I've been following this online thread about this. Okay, on Facebook, naturally enough. So Real Estate Mastermind. So one person proposed this. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. It says, these seller class action suits are actually going to hurt sellers. In California, our contract doesn't mandate seller compensation of buyer's agent, which I don't think that's true because I'm in California and our listing agreement does require us to follow NAR unless your MLS is broker owned. So I guess it's in different part. I mean,
maybe that statement regards what you're offering the cooperating agent, if anything.
Oh, like an actual percentage.
Yeah, like
maybe.
An actual.
Mm-hmm. But he says, but when asked, I tell sellers that by doing so, you're allowing the buyer to finance their agent commission fees. Without this, every buyer dollar used on commission is a reduction of $4 plus $9 plus in mortgage financing buyers can obtain. Ignore those numbers, doesn't matter. In other words, if the seller pays $15,000 in buyer agent commissions, that means buyers can afford to pay at least $60,000 more for the home. So what he's saying is a dollar in cash for a buyer is worth four times the amount in financed money, mm-hmm. which I think is a valid argument. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, and I think that's assuming, right? Because, I mean, that's assuming that the buyer is doing a 20%.
Right.
So just if the buyer generally is doing 3% down or 5% down, you know, then it has even more impact to them. You know, yeah. if they have limited funds to pull from, they might not even be able to pay an agent to represent them. So
okay.
now,
you know what's going to happen?
Yeah, what?
I think what buyers are going to do is find the agent that offers the cheapest service, the least amount of commission that they have to pay that agent, which will lead to mediocre at best representation.
And a lot of
the
lawsuits.
The sellers will be up in arms about it because it's crappy deals. Money will be left on the table because these buyer's agents, the cheap ones, don't know what they're doing. And it's a mess. It's a hot mess.
I hear that. I agree. Another thing that it's going to do, like Nika's saying, is if you're only putting 3% down, who puts 3% down? 3.5% down. People who don't have a ton of money to put down.
Or who don't want to leverage their money. You know,
but don't want to be house poor.
Yeah. But I'm saying people who don't have the money.
Mostly
right?
people who don't have the money and they're like
they
just getting in.
To...
So that's people like you and me at the beginning of our home buying careers, right? Like scraping together money to try to buy our first place. I had $6,000 to buy my first place. I had maybe three more left in the bank, okay? And somehow that was enough to meet the standard at the time when
you
I
you wouldn't have been able to pay fees for a representation
at all.
So you would represent yourself now?
Is I don't
that
know.
What we want?
I would either
we want
in states
to
that don't
themselves?
Have dual agency,
right.
I wouldn't have any representation.
Right.
Which is so against the reason why buyer agency was invented in the first place. It's because buyers, especially first-time home buyers, especially buyers who don't have a ton of money, can't afford to make mistakes in the buying process. They need guidance. They need people to recommend great inspectors. They need people to help them negotiate request for repairs. They
yeah.
need to know what options are available to them throughout the process. That's who it's going to hurt. And so I also think that sellers are going to get in a lot more lawsuits because buyers are going to feel duped by bad representation. So they think they're saving money. It's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. You think that because you have to offer to pay out of your proceeds for a competent buyer agent to actually close the deal, that you're making less money? Wrong. You're, I'm sure, making more money by allowing the buyer to essentially finance their the agency commissions, by marketing to a greater number of people in the world who are looking to buy what you're selling, and by having an agent that can actually protect you as the seller by doing the right kind of education to their buyer about due diligence, mm-hmm. contracts, what things mean, how to proceed, and all of that stuff.
And in states where dual agency is legal, people will go to directly to the listing agent, and then we're stuck with, we have to now rep both sides.
Yep.
When our fiduciary is really with the seller. So
it's well, just in dual agency, your fiduciary right. is not really with the seller. It's with both, and you become right. more transactional.
Right. But I see your point. But it is still a little funny.
People who are not
so ethical.
So ethical.
Right. We'll take that.
Might do what that agent did to us, like slide in an agreement where they have no duty to us.
Yep.
Right. And if we didn't notice that, we could have signed a shitty contract where we thought we were being represented and we're really not.
Right. You know? And it was sent via DocuSign. So you know how that is on DocuSign. Like
you could just
the
click
thing
through.
And you click, 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 and you
You're
don't
like,
even
oh,
read
he's
it.
Gonna tell me the details. I think I've mentioned this on another podcast, but there was someone who went directly to a listing agent thinking that they were going to get a certain level of representation there. And this listing agent, whenever like documents came in, including a natural hazards disclosure report, which, right, when you're a buyer's agent, you're going to look at it and point out things that you notice on that. And, you know, the buyer still has to read and review it. But, you know, oftentimes buyers trust us to call out red flags. On this one, it was an earthquake fault zone, and he's going to do development. And it was literally sitting on the fault. Which, if you're a developer, you now know that that means that there's going
to
be more engineering. That means it's going to be much more expensive. In this case, to the tune of $500,000.
Oh, my God.
More expensive than what he was expecting for the project he was expecting to do. He, because that, you know, that wasn't pointed out and, you know, to him, he had removed all his contingencies. He got the document. Didn't read it thoroughly. Removed his contingencies and ended up having to either forfeit his deposit or close once he, 3 days before closing, found out that that was a thing. Now, if he had had representation, that wouldn't be a thing. He could have been like, you know what, I'm canceling, I'm moving on to something that doesn't cost me, you know, half a mil
right.
more to build.
Well, there would have been somebody having an obligation of care.
Right, exactly.
I want to read you just a few more, like, comments from agents all over the nation, okay? So this one person responded and said, every MLS I'm familiar with in California is an NAR rules MLS, which requires an offer of compensation per the NAR MLS handbook. Mm-hmm. And the contributor's response was compensation must be offered, but it doesn't specify who must pay it. Auctions often push buyer's agent compensation on the buyer. Auctions. So the contributor said, it's the foundation of MLS. The offer of compensation is by the seller. It is offered by the seller by the very structure of the MLS. Clearly. It's
right.
a multiple listing service. It's mm-hmm. meant to be a marketplace where you you offer commission to a buyer's agent.
For someone right. to come and buy your house.
Yes. And then it says multiple listing service is a facility for the orderly correlation and dissemination of listing information so that participants may better serve their clients and customers and the public. Okay. So then someone else comments and says, not only it's not legal precedence, but correct me if I'm wrong, it's also a pretrial settlement in some corner of Massachusetts. From what is posted, there's no court decision, no chance for appeal or a judicial review. I would suggest that it's not exactly a compelling outcome for future similar cases. And that's where it's like, oh, don't underestimate this. These buyer agency lawsuits are happening right now. So there's another suit that has an Anywhere Real Estate, Century 21, Coldwell Banker, Sotheby's, Better Homes and Gardens, ERA, BHHS, REMAX, Keller Williams, everyone is in a similar lawsuit, you know, and NAR.
Yeah, but you know what? But that MLS really fucked people by settling.
Yeah.
I would have taken that to trial and I would have fucking, I would have, everything I've got, I would have been highlighted here. Here's
yeah.
everything that this person signed that obligated them to pay the buyer agent.
Right. Right.
And this is, go interview them. Ask, like, see if they're conscious decision makers. You know, do they have anything wrong up here? Should they have not been
yeah.
signing?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But,
yeah.
you know,
but you
honestly,
did sign. So on what
you
grounds
did, sign, exactly.
did they actually win? Like, they just settled before law.
Well, they settled
because
it's not
against precedent.
They thought we couldn't win this.
They settled to avoid a long, drawn out, expensive legal.
But now they're basically showing defeat. They're like confirming this.
Well, they when agreed in reality, to change
their... all their sellers signed a contract agreeing to those terms.
So there
was no wrongful doing. Why in the world are you settling if something wasn't wrong?
Because this MLS is essentially throwing the people who pay for its existence under the bus to avoid a stressful process.
Yeah.
Well, God, you know, it's funny. When literally as agents, we have to constantly face stressful processes every single day.
Yep.
Every day. The fight is literally what we do every fucking day. And to see the people who we pay to represent our best interests while we're out here representing our clients' best interests every day, just settle something like that is infuriating.
It's infuriating, but I told you, this is why I was years ago on this tip. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And probably got blacklisted from speaking at certain things because of my strong position exactly around this. I could see this coming.
So now what, though?
Well, here's what Rob Hahn says, if you know Rob Hahn. In a Substack post, industry consultant Rob Hahn opined that the settlement was a huge win for MLSPIN, given its minuscule $3 million price tag and very minor changes to its compensation rules. But the fact that MLSPIN went out on its own gave him pause. Quote, "The unity of defendants is utterly broken," Hahn wrote. "If MLSPIN can go do a deal and hang the brokerages out to dry, then NAR can do the same. Brokerages now know that. How that impacts things moving forward remains to be seen." Mm-hmm. Yep. So then he says, Hahn also emphasized that the MLS rule changes will have very little impact on buyer agent compensation and likely won't do anything about a chief complaint in the lawsuit, that buyer agents steer buyers away from listings that offer less than the typical commission in a market. Now, I personally don't agree with that. I mean, we don't do that. I don't do that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's annoying. Like, I've had buyers write on 1.5% buyer agency deals, which sucks. And then you see what the listing agent's getting, and it's like so much higher, and you're like, you know?
Yep.
It's frustrating. I think buyer agents get screwed quite a bit, actually, because
for the amount of
because
work
it's
that they
up
do?
To the listing brokerage, how they split it. I don't even know if a lot of listing agents who do like give very tiny amount to buyer's agents and save the rest of the commission for themselves, I don't know if they even advise their sellers. Like, you know, if we only offer 1%, we might not be, you know, incentivizing enough.
Right.
You know? We might not get the buyers that we want, the amount of buyers that we want and the offers that we want.
Right. So here's another thought. And there's another kind of stupid comment that says, my question is, why would anyone use an MLS that forces sellers to do that in the first place? Again, not understanding what the purpose of an MLS is. There are actually agents, licensed agents in our field who don't know the purpose of an MLS. But this is an interesting one, this other comment. Isn't this all because BlackRock and Vanguard didn't like buyer's agents competing with them or having to pay them commission despite that we gave them a client? I'll say this, greed stinks and it rots an entire industry. Sellers have never been required to pay commission. We all know that, but they're trying to find some way to eliminate buyer's agents. It's way cheaper for them. Look around you. BlackRock and Vanguard have everything to do with every movement you see. Greed will be their undoing. Sure, they'll smirk at this post, but 20 years from now, I will be.
Wow.
So it's interesting to think, is there a larger narrative? Because we know, right? I'm just in a conspiracy theory sort of way. Mm-hmm. We know that the supposed inflation that caused the interest rates to hike up at historically quick pace, mm-hmm. that then broke the banks intentionally and on purpose, because these people know what they're doing. Everyone knew that if you hike the interest rates like this, it's going to affect the small and medium sized banks. So you take down the neighborhood banks like a First Republic, which we have used in our neighborhoods, mostly in transforming neighborhoods too, to give the best programs, best customer service, and like best rates to buyers who are price sensitive. I mean, First Republic did it like nobody else. And now First Republic's rates are, you know, obviously they're basically gone. So mm-hmm. we don't have that option anymore. So they did whatever the industry was like working on there looked pretty strategic, in my humble opinion. But also, while they're manufacturing, the powers that be are manufacturing this crisis with interest rates and bringing the prices of property down, we know these big Wall Street funds are buying whole neighborhoods in Florida, in Texas.
Right.
Turn them into income, because
while the interest rates are rising, buyers who are less familiar with like how those look compared to historic rates and, you know, just kind of overall what it means for the market are being scared out of the market, mm-hmm. which leaves even more room for large scale investors to start buying.
Mm-hmm. Or just simply.
Or to keep buying and buy in abundance.
If the rates are too high, people's buying power goes down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So rates have to come down, or prices have to come down to meet the buyer capability of buying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, who wins? Who wins in the scenario of buyer agency disappearing? I guess that's the question I want to leave this conversation with. I would just love to hear from our audience's point of view how they feel about these things. I don't think, like these people on this real estate mastermind group, that they should underestimate the power of what's happening right now in our country, economically, strategically, with the Fed, with the funds, with the social climate. Like, it's all intentionally, I'm feeling a major social engineering thing. Just what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't leave the ordinary consumer
protected.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think as of recent, I've seen a lot of holes in the way things are done in the real estate world and a lot of issues that need to be worked out. Like even the efficacy of our actual contracts, like you were mentioning earlier.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Okay, so here's some things that we've also learned about our contracts. This is scary shit.
It is scary shit.
Ready for this?
And this means, this speaks even more to the fact that you need an agent who is actually going to have your best interest at heart, because even what's written in the contracts doesn't protect you.
Mm-hmm.
You need someone who's going to do the most and do extra to protect you, you know? Because what I learned from a recent experience... which was totally fucked up and is something that people experience, I think, more than we even think. So I had clients who bought a property that was owner-occupied, and the owners had been there for 30 years, you know? So it's like they've got a lot to pack. I mean, you know, it's a normal sale, right? We get to closing, and the owners... We record. So the way that the contract is written is that on recordation, unless you change the time that you get the keys, that's whenever the new owner can take possession. Okay. So we record at 9:30 a.m. 30 minutes after we record, I get a call from the listing agent saying, the sellers, they want to stay until Sunday. Can you see if that's okay with your clients?
What day was recordation?
Wednesday. 30 minutes. 30
no,
minutes.
No, it was like we closed on a Wednesday.
Yeah, we closed on a Wednesday.
And they want
to
stay till Sunday.
And they want to stay till Sunday. Right. So, you know, so another like, you know, three, four days, right? So, you know, mind you, let me run it back. During escrow, we had a conversation around a lease back. A lease back is when a seller occupies the property after closing at a cost, right? Mm-hmm. With an actual agreement put in place so that there's some protection for the people who are buying the property when they lease it back. And, you know, because of the rate that the buyers would have had to charge due to their cost to hold it, their PITI, which is their mortgage mm-hmm. costs, the Airbnb they would have had to get because they had nowhere else to go and that was supposed to be the house they're moving into. You know, there was a real cost. So we went to them with the cost. It was too much for them. They said, no, we'll be out by closing. Mm-hmm. We don't need extra time. So now whenever I get this call 30 minutes after we close, I'm like, absolutely not. You know, they knew that closing day was coming. They literally told us when we did the final walkthrough that they would have everything out by now. You know, and we gave you the opportunity to have that time after close at a rate that could work for my clients. If your clients needed even a shorter term, they had a moment to try to negotiate that. You could have negotiated that for them, listing agent, but now you're coming to me saying they need this extra time and we're closed and my clients, they're expecting keys. They're expecting to start moving their stuff in today. Like, this is not gonna work. The agent's like, well, what about another day? I'm like, no, like not another day. No, no, just absolutely not. Like they need keys today. We're going to be there at 5 o'clock to get the keys, regardless of what is going on with your clients. Okay. We're going to be there. So, you know, cut to later on that day.
You're giving them actually another day to move out.
No, not even.
You're being nice from 9 to, well, you gave them from 9 to 5.
Till the end of the day.
Which is nice.
You know, which is literally just because of my client's work schedule.
Right.
I mean, but it was like, hey, you do have longer than you would have had.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Beyond recordation.
Contractually, we have until 9, we have the right to get keys right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Right now. You know, but because of my client's schedule, you've got until 5. So you need to do whatever you have to do
to
help
them
get out, you know?
Right.
So, you know, come 5 o'clock, the sellers are still not out. They are very, 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 very slowly packing up stuff. There's like no sign that there's really been any movement all day. So at this point, my clients are freaking out, rightfully so, because hello, we're supposed to have the keys, you know?
And mind you, I was there witness for, in the walkthrough, the sellers themselves promised to the buyers in person, in front of me, in front of the listing agent, we will have our stuff out by tomorrow. It's gonna be out by tomorrow at 5 or something like, it will be out. It's going to be out. They said it several times.
And I was reassured this by the listing agent. But then of course, and so this tells you, the fact that this call came 30 minutes after we closed, that there was no intention to be out by then.
Mm. Right.
So, all of it was a lie, which is a whole nother thing. But we, you know, so whenever this happened and it was obvious that they were not going to be, I mean, well, one, I kept getting fed a story that like, you know, there were people coming, movers are coming, they're going to help them move out. Well, at 8 o'clock, you know, at 5 o'clock, we got a key, you know, which ended up being the back door and side door key. So it didn't even open the door you actually need to get in with, right? And, you know, they're still, again, very slowly getting together. So we get sold this story that people are coming. 2 hours later, drive by again. No one's there helping. Nothing's happening. 10 o'clock in the evening, I drive by. Nothing's happening. They're watching TV. It just, there's nothing happening. So at this point, they're in breach of the contract, you know. The contract stated that they were supposed to be out by 9:30. Mm-hmm. They weren't out. Mm-hmm. They 10 o'clock at night, they're still not out. So we got on a call with the lawyer about what my client's rights are, you know, because at this point now they're saying, look, tomorrow they're going to be out, you know, like they're going to be out. Don't worry about it. But we're like, well, what if they're not out? Because they've already told us this and it's not happening, you know, so we need to know what we can do. You know, I'm ready to bust down the fucking door, you know, but unfortunately, we're not permitted to do that. So, you know,
and now comes the real kicker, huh?
So, yeah. So now comes the real kicker. So, we got on the phone with the lawyer, you know, okay, like this is the situation. What can we do? Well, okay, apparently we can't do anything. Apparently we need to go through an actual eviction process to get the sellers out if they don't do it by their own accord, because they're under California
tenant
eviction
law. So they become tenants at sufferance.
So at this point now, it's a landlord-tenant situation. So we can't just remove their property from their personal property from the property. We can't, you know,
we can't go into your own house that you just bought and
turn
the utilities off.
We can't turn the utilities off. We can't change the locks. All the things that you would think would be things that you can leverage to get someone out of the house that you now own, you can't do. So now my clients, who did everything that they could do, who performed on time, who lived up to their contract, are literally suffering because of these people who have moved in. So mind you, okay, one, whenever we were talking damages, okay, well, what can we do? What can we collect as repayment for this situation? Well, guess what? I mean, rent is something you can go after for the period they're there, but it might not equate to your actual mortgage. Mm. I'm like, how does that even make sense when that is a real cost our clients are absorbing at a daily rate? That makes no sense.
Because it's all about the tenant protection in the state.
Two. It's all about the fucking tenant protection. But, you know, it's like, it's funny because it leaves another party, you know, it's like
injured.
It's like protecting half of the population,
right,
and then leaving other people out to dry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's ridiculous. But then in our contract, you know, which I had to actually, you know, even bring up this part, which I would think that a lawyer would know, but they didn't. In our contract, there's a clause that specifically says that if you give written notice to the seller that they should remove items that are left at the property after close and they don't remove it after 3 days, it's the buyer's right to dispose of that property and then charge that cost to the seller. So I'm saying this to the lawyer, like, this is something that's in our contract. Right. So, you know, our intention is to send that note, and if they don't get their shit out, then in 3 days, it's being put out on the curb. It's out. You know, and we're chasing that down too, along with the other costs, you know.
But you can't do that again either because it's tenants, right?
So, because of the landlord-tenant protections, you're not even allowed to do what your contract says, which is remove the stuff and have it hauled. They said, I wouldn't do that. You know, you could even be setting them up for a lawsuit against you if you remove their property. So I'm like, okay, so then what's the point of our contract?
Right.
Tell me, what is the point of our contract if there's no penalty for people violating it? My clients have to chase it up, which the cost alone of chasing it up probably equates to the loss that they're taking. Yep. So they don't even have a space to fucking do it. What's the purpose of the contract? If that part of the contract doesn't apply, why does this part of the contract apply?
Yep.
I was fucking livid.
Yep.
Fortunately, the next day, you know, the people, you know, they did manage to move out at like 9 o'clock at night, you know? Yeah. So it was like it was still a fight to the end. And, you know, and we had to make them very uncomfortable to make that happen. It took our constant presence the day before and the day after to get them to move the fuck out after they were literally contractually obligated to do so. It was, I'm sorry for all the, you know.
So I'm assuming that that piece of the contract only applies to when the person actually vacates the property but leaves their shit behind. Then it belongs to you and you can dispose of it.
But if an owner still is there,
and you close escrow and they stay, they become tenants and now you're effed.
Right.
I had that too, where a person had a lease back for 30 days, but in his mind, he had 60 days. But the lease back said 30 days. So we wanted to get keys. And he said, I can't give you keys. I'm here for 30 more days during the pandemic. So we were sweating We were trying to be so extra nice. And he did leave. But if he hadn't left, he would still be here now. And there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I was just going to say, Neek had to, what she discovered.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
So I never want to just make it drama because it has to be drama. And I understand that people, you know, who have been there for decades have a lot to move. Though we did have a 2-month escrow, so they had a lot of time to pack up their stuff. No, and it was clear that nothing was done up until the day of. But what we ended up finding out was actually that the listing agent had misrepresented to the seller when they were supposed to be out. Mm. So the seller thought that they had until their own property closed, which was supposed to be 2 days after our closing, to be out, which is not true. You know, the contract didn't stipulate that. The contract stipulated that they were out by recordation. Now, you know, obviously it would make sense that they would ask for time until they have a house to move into, but that wasn't negotiated. Instead, the seller agent said, no, they don't need the time, they're gonna be out, you know, and then proceeded to tell them, no, you can stay until then. So essentially he was pretty much saying, you know, just like breach your contract and stay.
Yeah.
And then I find out that, you know, not only did he do that, but he also lied to them about the timeline for their closing on their other property. So where they thought it was going to be that Friday, it actually wasn't for another 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
And so they actually ended up having to move into a hotel, you know, and thankfully they did move out and my clients could move in, but they had to move into a hotel because they got bad advice. So, you know, moral of that story is, one, you need it, like there was something that I was pushing for, and, you know, I don't know how much we want to go into that now, but there was something that I was pushing for when we were in escrow to protect my clients if there was something that happened like this. And, you know, because of time urgency and whatnot, we didn't end up.
Right, the clients opted not.
They opted not to go for that. For that added protection, you know, because they were also getting lip service from the seller and from the listing agent that they were going to honor the contract. So they were thinking, oh, it's not necessary.
Did you want to have a big holdback or what?
Exactly.
Just ask the holdback.
You know, And, you know, and so, you know, so in hindsight, obviously, you know, I would never let them just walk away from that, right? But, you know, but if that hadn't even been proposed, there literally would be nothing. I mean, there wasn't anything because we didn't stick, you know, we didn't leave it in. But now, one, I will never let.
But even if you had the holdback and they would still be in the house and they're just not moving out and you have to go through an eviction, that's like, what, 3 to 6 months process?
Well, yeah, but no, but there are ways that that holdback could have been written that I don't think we need to educate everyone on this podcast about because that is something that we as agents can handle with our own clients. But yeah, no, there were ways that there that could have compensation. Been written.
Yeah,
that would have disincentivized someone who wants that money from staying.
Right.
And that's what should have happened, you know? Yeah. But instead, because, you know, there was a time urgency on my client's side and they decided to forego this. No, but
what I'm asking is for the rights, if that would still be there now, what do you do? Nothing, right?
Well, you literally have to go through an eviction.
You have to
issue them a 3-day notice.
Yeah.
You have to issue them a 3-day notice and then you have to go through a 2-month at least, you know, probably at least 2-month process to evict them.
And I just wonder how much of this was the listing agent who's standing there smiling in our faces, you know, whatever. How much of this is he aware of? How much of this did he create? How responsible is he for this chaos? You know, it was just like really, really bad.
It was really,
and
really
I fear that there's no consequence. I fear that there's no consequence to him.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I'm taking it to as far as I can take it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely reporting him to, you know, the to CAR. Mm-hmm. You know, for ethics. You know, ethics violations.
Yeah.
Because he lied to me. He lied to my clients. He lied to his clients. And that resulted in a really fucked up situation for everyone, and his clients being now literally, like, I don't even know if they can afford to stay in the hotel for the 2 weeks. They might be homeless at some point. I don't know, you know? But this person left us in a horrible situation. And, you know, one thing that, you know, that I will say came out of it is that my clients got to see how much I had their back, you know, because I showed up there at 7 a.m. Knocking on that door, making sure that these people knew that our presence was there and they were gonna feel it until they left.
Right.
And once we actually dug into it, obviously I felt for their position because they were misled.
Yep.
You know, and that's horrible. But
well,
it also
does. Bad agent can just make so much trouble in a transaction. But even sadder
that this
is that our contract
didn't
protect. Which we honor so much is written by attorneys. Is delivered and distributed by the California Association of Realtors, is very porous and in LA, difficult to enforce. So it's something that if you don't know, you don't know, you know? So anyway, well, we've got some problems we need to solve in our industry. I'm gonna keep an eye on these lawsuits because there are a ton of them. And, you know, we're gonna do our best to make sure that our clients are protected and informed and educated because it seems like it's turning into the wild, wild west out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll see you next time on Under All Is the Land. Toodles. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real estate. It's like, you
agree to it.
We might need to delete the you, but that's how I feel. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles.